I'd like to welcome you to River Styx et Dofs. This is our final reading for this season, and I'd like to have the pleasure of introducing Mr. Michael Castro, who will be the first to read this evening. Michael's been involved with River Styx et Dofs as long as it's been going, and he's contributed greatly to its coming to the point where we have all these people here. This year he was the director. He has been the director in the past, and he's done an outstanding job, given us lots of good energy, many wonderful programs this season, and I've been real happy to work with him. I think that he probably has some wonderful thoughts to share with you this evening, and it is with great pleasure that I introduce Michael Castro.
That was Karen Duff, for those of you who don't know her, who is the proprietor of Duff's and has been really responsible for this, it being possible for this to happen. In fact, Karen, I'd like you to come here for a minute. Because before we start, we have a little gift. A meager token of our appreciation, but for Karen, we got her a little something to match her shirt. It's an autographed copy of Margaret Atwood's book, Dancing Girls, just for Karen. You all ready? Okay, I'm going to start with a kind of an invocation for the whole, for tonight and for the series for poetry in St. Louis and in the air. And this is a poem that's an invocation to the goddess of beauty. I don't usually do stuff like this. You know, people say, Castro's reading, oh, we're really going to get some scraggly stuff, you know. But we're going to do this, and the only reason I'm doing it is because it gives me the excuse to work with not just one, but two great musicians and great friends, Jay Zelenka and Greg Mills, who are the dynamic duo who live around the corner and are known as exiles. So, gentlemen. So you'll be hearing some rumbling coming off of the ground. You're sort of like smoke rising. Aphrodite, foam-born, the Grecian Venus, shaping of the waves, lava, bees swarming, foam-born, cloud above horizon, genus of marine worm with bristles of brilliant iridescent hues, tiny feet of sea mice, Aphrodite, tidal rush, shaping of the waves,
foam born. Meerschaum and magnesium. Opaque vision. Milk white. Basilicate. Aphrodite. Dark as Afro or Afrite. Icy glitter, bright light. They found thy body hot, oh morning star, in night. Foam born. Aphrodite. Morning star, thy rising sparks, this vocalizing. Atoms stretch toward thy shimmering music. In my lady's eye, I have watched thee. Sometimes stroked thy silken snatch, the dewy hair there opened thy door, oh room of mirrors, I have disappeared in thy generative dawn. Rise. The sheets are damp with pollen. Through my window, I hear children shouting. Birds singing. As you comb the fog out of your hair, sun streak in the mirror, I see you, a tiny needle of light. Aphrodite.
Exiles. Helen Adam was supposed to read here tonight, and it's unfortunate that because of illness in her family, she couldn't make it. Fortunately, however, we have a really excellent replacement that in Eugene Redmond. But I would like to just kind of share a poem with you that is really for Helen Adam. Helen Adam is now 77 years old, and she's a poet born in Scotland who's living in the United States about 30 to 40 years. She was one of the major figures in the San Francisco Renaissance in the late 50s and early 60s. And her poems come right out of the Scottish ballad tradition. They are in form of song poems, and they tell sort of dreamlike stories of love in all of its requited and unrequited permutations, with tinged with nightmare. I had the wonderful experience of spending some time with her in Colorado close to 8 or 9 years ago. And a group of us wound up climbing mountains in the tundra of the Rockies. And Helen, who was 69 at the time, was clambering out at the edge of cliffs, feeding birds, and really outstripping all of us. On the way back, I started this poem, which had been gathering within me probably for several months before that. But that encounter and time with Helen, I think, kind of helped bring it out. It's called The Other Side for Helen Adam. Have you been to the other side? Will you climb with me? The other side of the mountain high is unmapped territory. Oh, yes, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb with you till the end of time. Oh, yes, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb that mountain fair. Oh, climb that mountain fair. For I've been there, been there, been there. Oh, I've been there, been there. The snow is falling everywhere, but I've been there, been there. She takes his hand into her own. The wind is howling fierce. So cold, the cold osmosis bones as her words ring in his ears. Oh, yes, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb. I'll climb with you till the end of time. Oh, yes, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb. I'll climb that mountain fair. Oh. She draws him neath her red coat warm. Its fur crawls on her skin. She soon forgets the howling storm and hears her words again. Oh, I've been there, been there, been there. Oh, I've been there, been there. The snow is falling everywhere, but I've been there, been there. They climb and climb and climb and climb. The snow falls blurry white. He sees flakes dancing, yet feels blind. He can't tell day from night. A flash of fear, go back, go back. You know not where you go. He turns around to trace their tracks, but all he sees is snow. Oh, yes, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb. I'll climb with you till the end of time. Oh, yes, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb. I'll climb that mountain fair. Oh. His legs grew leaden, fingers numb. Her fur freezes to his bones. He tries to speak. Alas, he's dumb. His cries come out as groans. Her hand so fastly round his own turns bony as a claw. It grips him tightly, then lets go. The wind begins to roar. The snow is swirling round and round. It spins him like a top. Around, around, around the ground. He cannot see or stop. A dancing vision in the wood breaks through the relentless white. A fur shroud tail as red as blood. His teeth flash out to bite. Oh, I've been there, been there, been there. Oh, I've been there, been there.
The snow is falling everywhere, but I've been there, been there. An eagle soaring o'er the peak looks down where a timber wolf wails. An ice drop glistens on her beak. The wolf gambols after his tail. Oh, yes, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb. I'll climb with you till the end of time. Oh, yes, I'll climb, I'll climb, I'll climb. Climb that mountain fair, oh. Have you been to the other side? Will you climb with me? The other side, the mountain high, is unmapped territory. Unmapped territory. Unmapped territory.
This is a relatively recent poem. It's called After Vallejo, and the first line is a line from the Peruvian Indian poet Cesar Vallejo, who lived most of his adult life in Paris and died in the 1930s. Idle on a stone, unemployed, he looks into the river. Narcissus of scrounge, fop of scruff, suit shiny at elbow and butt, what creature stares up, wizened and tight-lipped out of the deep? Having devoured the short ends of cigarettes and the smoke of the soul, having walked through the classifieds, full of jobs, says the president, full of having stood in the funereal lines of the jobless multitudes, filled out the forms full of routine questions, requiring routines for answers. Who are you? Who are you? A man whose newspaper covers his head in the rain, who traces the lines of his face in the river, lines written by this tragic poetry. A man who stoops over in the privacy of phone booth to count his change and cough, who haunts the harsh streets, the hiring hall warehouses, the coffee shops of oblivion. Idle on a stone, unemployed. Home is no longer home as I is no longer I. Who will offer what he needs to mop his brow? Who will fill the cavity that quakes his spirit? Where is the doctor he needs to operate? What will the river say? And what are his qualifications? 3 million years spent developing an opposable thumb, an upright posture, a couple of million thinking, abstracting, hundreds of thousands traveling, learning, adapting, to arrive precisely here. Only a few thousand learning to write. Don't hold it against him. He can dig ditches, push paper, build pyramids. He has invented sources of light, a certain style, a simple mirror. Where will he go? What will he do? How will he fill out his application? Can he sign in under last job that he helped a guy? Will he beg? Will he steal? Will he stay still by the flowing river, idle on a stone, unemployed? This is a poem. It's called Getting There. I'm riding the bus to work, got my plaster-spattered cardinal cap on my head, a bag of lunch, the Morning Globe, historic Soulard neighborhood crumbling out the window. She gets my attention by sitting right down next to me, looking straight at me, breaks me out of a bricklaying reverie by saying right to me, "You got a cigarette?" I'm taken aback a bit by this directness, but I recover glibly, sure, fine, by all means, here. I can look at her now, youngish, maybe 30, a little frazzled around the edges, but energy sharply focused toward her center, her face, her mouth, something incredibly attractive in her forthrightness. You got a match? Write at me like that, crisp as a newly minted bill, in a normal matter-of-fact tone, loud in the silently crowded bus. You're not going to light that thing, I gape, incredulous citizen, pointing with my pack of camels at the no-smoking sign blaring over the seats. She looks at me like I'm from Mars. Fuck yeah, I'm gonna light it. And I'm gonna smoke it, too. Forthright with those clear, hard eyes. She leans down and does light it, peering up at me with a funny smile, looking me over. Where are you going? She says, more mocking than flirtatious. To work? I nod, the lunch bag suddenly heavy between my legs. Her smile turns inward as she leans back and smokes. Then she whips around as if on impulse. You know where any jobs are? Her earnestness tugs at my heart, but I've got no answer, just a sad shake of the head. She stretches, breathes in and out, billowing smoke expansively, tuned to where she is going, as if knowing. Meanwhile, the driver has stopped the bus. He is standing and turning and looming over the passengers. Is someone smoking on the bus? He ventures like a pronouncement from on high. A sea of eyes, the old, the infirm, the deranged, the vulnerable, the flotsam, the handsome, ride the waves from the driver to the girl who sits calmly, blatantly, puffing on a cigarette next to me. I feel myself sink lower as she seems to rise higher, buoyed up by the blue wisps of smoke. The driver strides toward us. He is a large, serious black man. He stops and stares. Miss, he says, as their eyes lock. Either you put out that cigarette or you get put out. He's right to the point. Clear in his direction, too. That's why he's the driver. Inside eternity, she pauses, then nods crisply. She bends her upper body forward and furiously pumps her right arm up and down to crush the offending glowing cigarette on or through the floor. All the time looking up at the driver, defiant, as if set to say, "There, asshole." The confrontation, more or less, over, the driver turns grimly, a sheriff doing his job, shuffling back down dusty Main Street. He plants his butt in the saddle, his eyes on the road, his passengers back in their private oblivions, and with a whine, we trot. She slumps down in the seat next to me, as if sighing with her entire body. Within seconds, I feel the back of her hand tapping my leg. Turning slightly, I catch her demented grin. Smoke licks up from around her curled fingers. Cuffed deftly in her palm, the cigarette is still alive. Low riding, she smokes that sucker clear down to Broadway, which is where she's going. Getting off, she smiles at me and murmurs, "Thanks for the light." Later, as I work on the wall above the sad city, she stays with me. "Thanks for the light." I should have echoed the thought, I think, loud and clear, right back to her. Thank you. That one's for Danny Spell, was kind of as a postscript, a little poem called After the Rain. Robins hopping, looking down for worms and up for other robins. That poem is one that I, in the style that I pretentiously refer to as poetry verite, in that it just simply tries to recount a story of something that actually happened. This is another one in that same vein called Chump Change. And it's set next door, actually, in Europa. Chump Change. Nick hunches into Europa Bar. His sport coat is shiny with soil, and his face's deep wrinkles match the coat's dark creases. Once well known as a saxophone player whose night beat covered this jazz and river city, tucking it in with the flowing sheets of anguished beauty. In recent years, we'd seen him rarely, and then only as a ghost of his former self, hungry and roaming the crumbling streets, spaced out and filthy. Those deep lines like river ruts of suffering left by a flood of electroshock scarring his face and leaving it a mask of despair, a shock-worn shell, a burnt-out case. Rumors of drug problems, money problems, love problems, a crack-up, jail, bliss, the mental ward, surrounded his name like thick smoke of a smoldering butt. Nick drags himself into Europa and focuses on our cheery foursome, chatting and laughing beneath the blank TV. And in our midst, he recognizes Cherubic David, a former musical cohort, and now well known as the mellowest trumpeter in town. Nick arches his being, strides right up, and for openers blows. I haven't eaten in 2 days, been sleeping in this sorry suit, spent last night in city jail, got released this morning. I crossed Market Street and found this found me. He flashes out of his inside pocket a paperback book. It's a copy of Vincent van Gogh's journals with one of van Gogh's haunted self-portraits printed in blazing red on the cover. We look up from those flames to Nick's tortured, sallow face. He looks David in the eye. Can you lend me $5, Dave? I'll pay you back next month. David screws up his soft, round face. It's just dawning on him who this is before him, supplicating in the silence. Nick, he muses. Now, wait a quick minute, Nick. How are you going to be able to meet such a heavy commitment, seeing as we only see each other now once every 10 or 15 years? Nick comes back. Give me $5, man. If I don't pay you back, I'll give you my horn. David screws his face. No, don't give me your horn, brother. Can you lend me $3? Nick wheedles, his voice rising. $3? Come on, David, man. We used to play together. David, trying to lighten the sound and playing to his audience, responds, "You drive a hard bargain, Nick." Nick returns to the head. Come on, man, I haven't eaten. David digs into his pocket, says, okay, I'll give you some change, get you a bowl of soup or something. Nick accepts the jingling coins without expression, plays with them, shifts their weight in his palm. Chump change, he murmurs softly, flatly. David elaborates. I don't know whether it's chump change or not, but it'll get you something to eat. Nick turns off stage, shuffling to some unheard beat toward the door. Suddenly, he whirls wildly and shouts, "You got any more money?" Amplifying his theme for all to hear. David, softly, steadfastly, got no more money to give away. They stare at one another, locked in a long, sad, silent note. Nick gathers himself again and says goodbye, naming each one of us with incredible care and precision, lingering on each enunciated syllable. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
by. David, ruefully,
bye, Nick.
Don't give away your horn now for $5. Thank you. This one's called Now Playing. The decline and the fall of the West, from Aristotle to Atom Smashers, from Nixon to Exxon, from Ray Gun to Watt, a war on nature, Cortez to Cotton Mather, gold to iron, oil to Olay. The picadors prod the kicking carcass, the politicians caucus, the air grows heavy, not to mention the atmosphere, which is full of fear. Leaves of grass uprooted, soldiers recruited, North versus South, black versus white, Catholic versus Protestant, Jew versus Arab, man versus woman. The human marriage dissolved, the human soul, mind, heart, split, a war on nature. It's all in the file. We got it on tape. From the tree to Galilee, from the Empire State to the Golden Gate, from White Sands to the reviewing stands, gutted and blasted and nailed and fenced, weeded and deeded, to be secure in an isolation called wealth, protected by the law and the human condition, called love, a romantic dream of which the poets sing. What does it mean to be insured and entertained under the acid rain? To wait 20 centuries for Messiah as the heart hardens, arteries clog, blood boils, spills, winter kills, and we dream an air-conditioned desert in which freedom equals money and deism slash theism dissolves into meism and 2 + 2 equals more. We starve for what's inside us as corporationality denies our eternality. Two views of the world via hemp. Some wove thick rope of it to bind things down. Others blew it up in smoke. This one's called Auguries of Experience. When man aspired, down he fell, losing Eden, finding hell. Earth became a suffering place, a path to death, the human race. And death meant fear and awe and doubt. God cast aspiring angels out of heaven, where he lived alone, contemplating what he'd done. Love still lived amidst the strife. Man took woman for a wife. In time, they struggled to be free, to use the knowledge from the tree. But knowledge proved a clever cage. Mankind rattled, mad with rage. God just frowned and tipped the pole. Darkness fell on every soul. You don't want to clap that one. Right. Okay, I want to read a poem called Them. This is tries to be about that entity that we never know what exactly it is and we always refer to as them. I am an endangered species. Yet I am human, and I am free, living in eternity. But also from birth on this planet Earth, in the system of them. Them been here since the beginning of fear. Them drag me wailing from the womb. Them'll bury me silent in a tomb. Them granted curiosity and planted a forbidden tree. Them's tricky, full of mystery. Them writes the book of history. Them calls me a woman, calls me a man. Them tells me what I can't and can. Them calls me a nigger, calls me a Jew.
them as neat as a Nazi, twisted as a screw. Them etches furrows in my head and drives me from my marriage bed to walk the furrowed path them paved, lonely, weary, to the grave. Them draws me close to rend me apart. Them aches my head and breaks my heart. Them makes money and taxes too. Them hires and fires me and you. Them runs amok, them calls for order, them signs the deed, them lines the border. Them pits me against my sister and brother, not to mention my earthen mother. Them is the enemy of all mankind. Them hides somewhere in my mind. Them smashes the atom, the end is near. Soon them or us must disappear. Jim Igo, I saw peeping from around the corner a minute ago. There he is. This is Jim Igo's haiku. Cottonwood trees, wind, okay, if I can find this poem, we might try something a little different. I'll read a couple more. Okay, this is a poem called So Long. And I want to ask your help on this one, right? Okay, this one has a repetitive kind of beat and a refrain. And it has a basic rhythmic pattern that goes like this. Bum, 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 bum. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. That pattern three times, and then bum, 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 bum. Now the words go like this. In those 1, 2 patterns, right, it goes fool, fool, bum, 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 bum. And then I sneak in a little line. And then it goes fool, fool, bum, 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 bum. And then fool, fool. I always wonder why they say bum, 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 bum. Yeah. It's either dum, 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 or bum, 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 bum. But it feels right, so whatever you feel, right? Feels right going dum, 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 dum up here. And then that refrain, which the words to which are, and I want you to take notes on this, right? It goes, I've been a fool too long, too long. I've been a fool too long. So this is a poem that's going to get you in the end, right? All the way through. So we're going to do this, right? You're all going to go along with me and do fool, fool, and leave it to me. Fool, fool, and leave it to me. Fool, fool, and leave it to me. And then you all go, I've been a fool too long, too long. I've been a fool too long. Let me hear you say, fool, fool. That's no good. Let me hear you say it again. Ready? 1, 2, and fool, fool, bent like a gnome. Fool, fool, writing the poem. Fool, fool, wants to go home. I've been a fool too long, too long. I've been a fool too long. Let's step it up. Fool, fool, mirror mutters. Fool, fool, student stutters. Fool, fool, lover sputters. I've been a fool too long, too long. I've been a fool too long. Fool, fool, fool day and night. Fool, fool's gold shining bright. Fool the bomb. Fool, fool, meaning no harm. I've been a fool too long, too long. I've been a fool too long.
Fool, fool, a look in the eye. Fool, fool, born to die. Fool, fool, wondering why. I've been a fool too long, too long. I've been a fool too long.
Thank you. Well, one of the highlights of this past year was hearing J.D. Perrin a couple of times at the Garden and then at that little club, Jimmy. J.D. is a terrific St. Louis musician who's now living in New York. This one's called J.D. Perrin Calling. A voice with a choice, a voice with a beat, a voice with a ring comes out of the night. A voice full of flutings, a voice full of stones, a voice with the range of a saxophone comes out of the phone. A voice that feels, a voice that heals, a voice that walks and whistles and wheels and deals, a voice that's real. Okay, I'll do two more and then sit down. This is a poem called Freedom Ring. It's one of several poems that are written in memory of people. This is Freedom Ring from Martin Luther King. Dr. King, Dr. King, when did you hear freedom ring? When the bloodhounds growled and wailed? When sheriffs locked you into jail? When you sat up front in a bus? When you overcame for us? Dr. King, Dr. King, when did you hear freedom ring? When the tap clicked on your phone? When you prayed at night alone? When a child returned your smile? When you walked the extra mile? Dr. King, Dr. King, when did you hear freedom ring? With civil rights writ into law, with Klansmen pounding at the door, when you won the Nobel Prize, when you looked into deep dark eyes. Dr. King, Dr. King, when did you hear freedom ring? When you lunched with congressmen, when you marched with garbage men, when your dream lit up the night, when your soul beamed in the light. Dr. King, Dr. King, when did you hear freedom ring? When you climbed the mountain high? When the bullet let you die? When your spirit rose to speak? When you turned the other cheek? Dr. King, Dr. King, when did you hear freedom ring? Okay, I'll close with this last poem. Another very high point for me of the past few months was in January. Some of you I know were here at a reading that we did in which Shirley LaFleur participated along with Maurice Kenney. And the great blues man, Henry Townsend. And Mrs. Townsend. And all of that was to celebrate the poetry of Arthur Brown and the publication of a book called Trumpet in the Morning by Arthur Brown, by River Styx. This is a poem. Arthur Brown, a dear friend of many of us here, died in summer of 82. Same, within a month of Arthur's death, two other Missouri poets, Thomas McAfee and Mbembe Milton Smith, McAfee of Columbia, Missouri, Mbembe of Kansas City, also died. This is a poem for those three Missouri artists called August 1982. Missouri and America lose three poets to death. For Tom McAfee, Mbembe Milton Smith, and Arthur Brown. Oh, these dog days leave us panting, chanting ancient prayers, public praise songs and private curses, wiped out in weeping, sweating and sleeping, huddled together, silent and disbelieving, gently reaching out hesitant fingers to touch each other's still damp live flesh. The death of a poet is a terrible thing, and three of our tribe have gone these dog days to answer the cries of the lost Cerberus, Anubis, tuned to the barks we can't quite hear, yet sense drawing near. Three Missouri poets dead, headlines don't read. It aches the heart, shakes the head. It aches the head, shakes the heart of the country. Columbia, Kansas City, St. Louis, Highland, Plain, and river towns hoarse with grief, flowers wilting in the heat. Hearses drift down sleepy downtown streets, voices gone downstream, unheard beneath the river murmur of blood and bones, roots and earth. O cities of the heart, enduring your dull, dumb pain with dazed expression, news sheets bury your poets on back pages, noticing death in tiny type. Reporters who in ignorance ignored sit bored at funerals or don't attend, not trained to hear spirits' fluted whispers or saxophone shrieks in life or death. More important stories out there they sit dreaming than the cold facts of poets' demise. Words are facts. Spirits are facts. Consciousness is a fact. We cannot touch, or can we, touch the news of who we are, have been, can be, that Tom, Bembe, and Arthur told, mappers of this territory, highland, plain, and river of the human soul. The depressed valleys of America yawned as Wispy McAfee smoked in his wasting cancer and spoke the intense spaces between you and me. And Mbembe opened the window to let in the light of a clear day down on the corner, then leaped. And Arthur scribed and sung his river song and oceanic visions, then suddenly drowned in the flood of a fluttering heart. Who would not sing for these who themselves sang deeply the bittersweet poetics of life, the treasured curse of our space, our place, our multiverse? We ache for our friends, our vigorous and strong voices, for the music unheard on radio, the news not noted in the papers, the images absent from TV. Three of our tribe are gone, and America goes about its business, obsessed with self, yet blind to it and bent on self-destruction. Three silent voices live on, in mind, communion, creation, and in rare and treasured books that poets keep and carry on.